AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at Rubrik.com. That's Rubrik.com.
With the state of today's economy, it is more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made of the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back into your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality made to last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
Hannah Murray on TRE in the afternoon.
Joining us on the line now is Anna Pezos. She's a writer and documentary filmmaker. Her latest book, Killing the Nerve, takes the reader on her journey from the Mediterranean mediocrity of bourgeois Barcelona life through her unstructured Erasmus days in Thessaloniki, her first steps in journalism in Jerusalem, her sail across the Atlantic with an unsuitable lover, and to post-Me Too pre-pandemic New York. Welcome to the show, Anna.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us. So what made you want to write this book and share your story?
Well, so in the book, I look back at my 20s, basically, and we could say it's like all of the things I wanted to write for my 20s while I was attempting to become a journalist, and I didn't ever write. In a way, in this book, I recovered all of that.
Yeah. So tell us about your time in Barcelona. That's where you're from, isn't it?
Yeah, I am from Barcelona. I was born and raised in Barcelona. But I spent most of my 20s just going around in Greece, in Jerusalem, as you said, in a sailboat, in New York. So obviously I thought there was nothing, you know, worth it in Barcelona, which... Later on, I reassessed that and I came back and stayed here for good.
Yeah. So tell me about your time in Greece. I've spent some time in Greece as well, a beautiful country.
Yeah. So the opening chapter is Greece, which is where I did my Erasmus. So, yeah, I was in my early 20s and I was looking to go somewhere that was interesting and, you know, that felt alive. And it was 2013. It was the onset of the crisis in Greece, and there was a lot of turmoil there. And I thought it would be an interesting place to try to do journalism, but also, you know, to live experiences and learn. And yeah, I had never, you know, met a Greek person in my life back then, and when I picked the country, but I ended up eventually like really falling in love with the language, with the place, but also becoming very depressed while living there because of this kind of, you know, atmospheric crisis that was all around.
Yeah. So how long did you stay there for?
So my Erasmus lasted for half a year, give or take. And then I went back many times after that. So all in all, I don't know, it must have been maybe a couple of years if you take all of the months I spent there for, you know, different reasons. I went back once to film a documentary on a religious cult. And also I wrote a story about the Ladino speakers of Thessaloniki. So I kept going back to Greece, trying to find something there.
Yeah. And since you left the last time, have you wanted to go back?
Oh yeah, last time I went there was in 2021, I think. And it was just for a vacation. I haven't been back since because, well, I had a child, so
a bit busy with that.
Yeah, I haven't been traveling that much with her.
And how did you get to Jerusalem? You went there. You became a journalist there. Is that right?
Yeah, I studied journalism in Barcelona, and right when I finished my degree, I went to Tel Aviv to visit a friend who was working there, another journalist. And I found the place and the conflict to be very, you know, engaging. And I met a lot of people there. So I figured I would move there and try to freelance for a bit. And I also had a kind of a weird job. I was a ghostwriter for a Spanish correspondent. So I started from there, and I ended up staying in Jerusalem for a little bit less than a year, and then I was invited to leave by the government.
Mm. So how recent were you there then?
I was there in 2015.
Okay.
2014, 2015, yeah.
Yeah.
Is that what you asked, sorry?
Yeah, yeah, when you were there, yeah. And you say you were asked to leave. Were lots of journalists asked to leave then?
Sorry, can you repeat?
You said you were asked to leave?
Yeah, because I didn't have the proper visa.
Okay.
To work as a journalist in Israel, you need to have a government-issued visa.
Right.
And for that, you need to work for a, you know, approved media, whatever. And I never got that document. So I was just, you know, staying there on a tourist visa and coming in and going out. And one of those trips, I got picked at the airport for a, you know, questionnaire.
Yeah.
yeah, I had to leave, basically.
Okay. And how about New York? What took you there?
So New York was after Jerusalem. I was wondering what to do with my life. I was working at a newspaper in Barcelona. And then I thought I could ask for a scholarship to go and study there. To do a master's degree in the US, but mostly I was thinking of just finding a way to get out of Barcelona again and look for better job prospects in there. So I applied for the Fulbright scholarship and I got it. So I spent 2 years, well, first 2 years studying a master's degree, and then I stayed there. I was actually working for the BBC in New York. And then I came back when the pandemic started.
You were able to get out then, were you? As soon as it started?
I took the last flight before international flights were canceled. It was crazy. The flight was empty. No one else was there.
Yeah. God, that must have been very weird. Was it kind of scary? Did it seem different in New York to when you got back to Spain?
So actually, in New York, it kind of arrived later on because, you know, it started in Europe, it started in Greece and then Spain. And so when the lockdown began in Catalonia, in where I'm from, in New York, everyone was kind of chilling already, you know. I mean, we were working from home, so not really chilling, but there wasn't a feeling of chaos and panic.
Mm.
But when the announcement came that the lockdown was beginning here, I panicked, like, oh my God, what if I get, you know, stranded in New York forever and I can never come back? I panicked and I booked a flight, you know, overnight. And the next day I left in this empty international plane. It was crazy. The airport in Barcelona was empty as well. And then like the day after or 2 days later, there were no more flights.
Mm, gosh, very
and then,
weird.
You know, I thought I would be back in New York, you know, 2 weeks later because I had a job there and everything. But, you know, the thing went on and on and on. And eventually my American visa ended and I decided to stay in Barcelona.
Yeah.
And not renew it.
So what made you kind of fall back in love with Barcelona again? Because you were always looking to leave and now you've settled there. What made you want to stay this time?
Yeah, I think after many years of going around, especially when I was in New York, I felt this kind of rootlessness. Like I was really craving some roots and some community and some sense of belonging somewhere. And suddenly all of this going around seemed kind of absurd. And, you know, I think anything made more sense if I made it here where I'm from. So, yeah, I was really, and, you know, I have my family nearby. I have most of my friends nearby. So I just had this, you know, this overwhelming, you know, need or for some roots and stability. And shortly after I had a baby, so I guess it's related.
Yeah. It's nice to be happy where you are, and particularly where you're from, I guess. I think it can be quite a normal thing to get itchy feet and to want to explore and to see new places. But when you realize that where you're from or where you live is a great place, you know, people are flying from all over the world to visit Barcelona. It's a fabulous city, and people would think you're so lucky to be from there and to live there. So to genuinely feel like that is lovely.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, lately people are coming here and they're not enjoying their holiday so much because of how crowded it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you noticed a big difference? Because there's obviously issues with the short-term rentals, and there's a lot of protests and things as well.
Yeah, it's a big issue here. I mean, the rent prices is huge, as it is probably in every major city right now.
Mm.
The housing crisis and over tourism is also a big deal. Yeah.
Yeah. And how about your Catalan identity? Obviously with the independence referendum, and that must have been difficult for you over the years. Where do you see yourself or see Barcelona when it comes to Spain?
Yeah. So when the whole 1st of October protest began, it was 2017, you know, where this attempt at secession that failed. I was in New York, and I realized, I mean, I had always seen myself as quite detached from these issues. Like, they don't really, you know, concern me. But when it happened and I was in New York, I realized I was really hurting. I needed to be here. And, you know, people around me were very divided in this matter. People in my own family were. And my family is half from other parts of Spain and half Catalan. Like, from my mother's side, they're Catalan. So I guess I've never had the sort of strong sense of identity that other people have here.
Mm.
And I grew up thinking I was not politicized in this sense. Then, of course, the issue, you know, reality forced you to take sides. And when this happened, I didn't see myself aligned with any camp, really. it was a bit strange, like having this sort of mixed identity and not being able to, you know, really belong to anyone, to any identity fully.
Did it make it difficult within your family if your family had different views? Were they kind of wanting you to make a decision?
No, not really.
Okay.
No, my family. Also, I was far, so I was not having issues with my family, really.
Okay.
It was more with other people.
Mm. Well, that's good. And I have to ask you why the book is called Killing the Nerve. Where does that come from?
Yeah, so that comes from the dentist. I was sitting at the dentist's office after I came back from New York. I was settled in Barcelona already. And I had a tooth infection, which hurt really bad. And the doctor, the dentist, looked at it and said, okay, we have to kill the nerve. And at that point, I was starting to think about this book. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's perfect. I have the title already. Because I felt like it was the perfect metaphor for what I had been trying to do my whole 20s, which was to kill this nerve, this sort of restlessness that I felt, running away all the time, you know, like. So yeah, it comes from the dentist.
Yeah, I like it. And can you tell us about your boat trip?
Oh, the boat trip, yes. So that's the third chapter. And there I tell the story of this this person I met, who he is a photographer. When I met him, he was about to buy a sailboat and sail around the world. That was his idea. And we started a relationship, so I figured I would go with him. But, you know, he was several years older than me, and it was my I had like this insane infatuation with him. So that chapter is a bit on, sometimes you fall in love with a story, with some fantasy in your head, and not with an actual person. So I tagged along, you know, I went with him on this boat and we sailed from Amsterdam to the Canary Islands, and then we crossed the Atlantic. And after crossing the Atlantic, I left the boat. I was like, okay, I'm done with this boat and this relationship and everything. And I came back to Barcelona.
Hmm. Do you look back at it with regret, or just a learning experience, just a part of your life?
It was definitely a learning experience. And this person, Guillermo, I'm actually really fond of him. Like, I learned a lot from him. He had this sort of instinctual wisdom, and the way he moved through life was very inspiring in a way.
Mm.
Yeah.
Nice that you can learn from it. It's nice not to have regrets and just, you know, chapters of a book, as they say.
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, literally.
yeah. Well, if people want to get a copy of Killing the Nerve, it's out now. It's available on our website, tre.radio, and it's by Anna Pezos, who we've been chatting with today. Anna, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18+ in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.